Today is Thursday, April 10th, and this is the World Socialist Website. Trump's tariff pause, another expression of the deepening crisis of U.S. imperialism and the capitalist order, by Nick Beams. The announcement yesterday by U.S. President Trump of a 90-day pause in the implementation of his so-called reciprocal tariffs, ostensibly to allow negotiations to take place, is another expression of the deepening economic and financial crisis of American imperialism and its state. The move came amid growing signs that the entire financial system, in particular the U.S. Treasury market, was just days or even hours away from a meltdown on the scale of the crises of September 2008 and March 2020, or potentially even greater. In announcing the pause, Trump revealed the essential core of his tariff hikes by escalating the economic war against China, the world's second largest economy, which all factions of the U.S. political establishment regard as an existential threat to American global hegemony. Trump declared that because China had retaliated against U.S. tariff hikes, tariffs on Chinese goods would be raised to 125% effective immediately. In an earlier period, such an economic blockade would have been recognized as an act of war. While the reciprocal tariffs on all other countries are being temporarily suspended, the 10% tariff on all goods entering the U.S. will remain in effect. In the lead-up to the announcement, the sell-off on global stock markets continued. Even more significant, however, was the sell-off in the U.S. Treasury market, a foundation of the global financial system, which drove yields sharply higher. This mounting financial turmoil was a key factor in Trump's decision. According to a person described as close to the White House, cited by Financial Times, quote, "Trump is fine with Wall Street taking a hit, but he doesn't want the whole house to come down," unquote. A number of factors were driving the mounting crisis in the Treasury market. Hedge funds and other major investors, reeling from cumulative losses in the stock market amounting to hundreds of billions of dollars, were facing margin calls from the banks, that is, demands to provide additional funds as collateral to maintain the credit lines essential to their operations. As markets plunged, the only available source of additional cash was the sale of Treasury holdings. Had this continued, it could have triggered a panic on the scale of March 2020, when the Treasury market froze and the U.S. Federal Reserve System intervened, injecting trillions of dollars into the system within days to restore stability. It became apparent that foreign investors and governments, which hold roughly one-third of U.S. Treasury bonds, were beginning to pull out of the market. There were also signs that hedge funds were being forced to unwind their so-called basis trades, a strategy that profits from small differences between the price of Treasury bonds and their corresponding futures contracts. Because the price gap is minimal, these trades rely on massive leverage, with the total volume estimated at around $1 trillion. Fears were emerging that China, the second largest holder of U.S. Treasury bonds, could start to shift out of dollar assets in response to Trump's economic war against it. The dollar has been falling on currency markets, raising growing questions about how long it can maintain its role as the global reserve currency under conditions in which U.S. policy is a major source of instability and uncertainty. Summing up the worsening situation, longtime analyst Ed Yardini remarked that the sell-off of U.S. treasuries, usually considered a safe haven during periods of financial stress, was a sign that, quote, the Trump administration may be playing with liquid nitro, unquote. Larry Summers, the Treasury Secretary under Clinton, said yesterday that the events of the previous 24 hours were a warning that a, quote, serious financial crisis wholly induced by U.S. government tariff policy, unquote, could be looming. Following the announcement, Wall Street went into raptures. The NASDAQ jumped nearly 12%, its biggest one-day gain since 2008, while the S&P 500 rose by 9.5%, and the Dow surged 8%. As with every action of the Trump administration, the events of yesterday were steeped in corruption and criminality, just before the markets opened, and several hours before the public announcement of the pause, Trump posted on social media that, quote, "This is a great time to buy," unquote. It will be left to future investigation to uncover how many billions were made by the Trump family and the gang of fascists operating in and around the administration. Trump and his acolytes will claim that the growing number of countries now seeking negotiations on tariffs and his erratic on-again, off-again methods are proof of his supposed great skill in securing beneficial deals for U.S. capitalism. Nothing could be further from the truth. Trump's gyrations are not signs of strength, but the personified expression of the deepening crisis of U.S. imperialism and its state, for which he has no solution. Government debt stands at $36 trillion and is rising daily, on a trajectory universally acknowledged as unsustainable. Interest payments alone are approaching $1 trillion annually and are rapidly becoming the single largest expenditure in the U.S. budget. The trade deficit is running at around $1 trillion, having increased by 17% over the past 12 months. Domestically, consumer spending and confidence are both falling, and hundreds of millions of workers and their families face further reductions in their living standards as prices escalate on goods from China, which make up a large share of household consumption due to the tariff hikes. Business confidence is in tatters due to the uncertainty generated by the administration's policies. A 90-day pause for negotiations with the dozens of countries targeted by reciprocal tariffs will do nothing to reverse this collapse. Recession is very much on the horizon. No one knows what will come out of the talks, but the idea that countries like Vietnam, Thailand, and Cambodia, as well as several impoverished African nations, could take any action capable of resolving the U.S. trade deficit is ludicrous. The major powers, such as Japan and the European Union, have no solution either. And no one, including Trump, has any idea what will happen after the pause. There is one aspect of the pause that follows a clear logic. It is part of a broader drive to corral countries into a U.S.-led global offensive against China. This is especially evident in Southeast Asia, where the economic threats directed at regional countries are aimed at pressuring them not to move closer to Beijing. The message being delivered is, align yourselves with the U.S. on the key issue of national security, that is, the preparation for war against China, and make major concessions to the U.S., not only on economic issues, but on foreign policy as well, or you will suffer the consequences. The escalation of the tariff against China to historically unprecedented heights is the form through which this dictate is being delivered. Trump's actions yesterday have pulled the U.S. back from a full-scale financial crisis that could have erupted as early as over the weekend. But what took place yesterday was not a resolution of the crisis, but just a step towards the next one, which will take an even more explosive form. This is because Trump's so-called Liberation Day, April 2nd, was not a negotiation tactic, but the destruction of what remained of the post-war international trading order. It cannot be put back together again. All these so-called guardrails put in place after 1945 to prevent the type of crisis which erupted in the 1930s and led to war no longer exist. There is a madness in the policy of the Trump administration, but it is a madness with an objective basis, as it flails from one economic improvisation to the next, confronting a crisis for which it has no solution. The administration is carrying out a systematic assault on democratic rights and erecting the framework of a dictatorship in the United States. In whatever conflicts exist within the state apparatus, all factions are united in their determination to defend a capitalist system that is hurtling toward catastrophe. Trump, the grotesque and criminal personification of American imperialism, along with the representatives of ruling classes in every country, will use the pause to coordinate their responses to international rivals and sharpen their weapons against the working class at home, in preparation for the eruption of class struggle they all fear and know is coming. The international working class must soberly take stock of the events of the past week. The worst mistake it could make is to think that with the pause, the crisis has somehow passed. It has not. Accordingly, just as the capitalist ruling classes are making their preparations for what is to come, so must the working class, in the U.S. and internationally. That preparation involves, above all, the political struggle for the program of socialism, as the only viable solution to the deepening crisis of the capitalist system that is so vividly on display. Genocide and Starvation in Gaza Stepped Up Following Netanyahu's Meeting with Trump, by Kevin Donnelly. The Campaign of Genocide and Expulsion of Palestinians from Gaza, by U.S. Imperialism in Israel, continued with intensity on Tuesday, one day after the war criminal Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met with President Donald Trump in the White House. In the past 48 hours, Israeli airstrikes in Gaza killed at least 38 Palestinians and wounded 55, including children. Many casualties occurred in the Shujaya area of Gaza City due to a strike on a residential building. Shujaya is one of the largest neighborhoods of Gaza, which once held as many as 100,000 people, and is in the southern quarter of Old City of Gaza and outside of the city walls. The dense population and overcrowding by refugees living in tents near the residential building were certainly known by the Israeli military. This was the reason the four-story structure was targeted. The building was right next to the Al-Hawashi Mosque. A total of 8 homes were destroyed, along with significant damage done to nearby structures. Israel justified its murderous targeting of civilians, as it has done continuously over the past 18 months, by claiming it was seeking to eliminate a senior Hamas militant who was in the area. While no name or evidence was provided, at least 23 people, including 8 women and 8 children, were killed. A report by Al Jazeera described the scene, quoting, "Emergency responders and neighbors who narrowly escaped death have been digging with their bare hands to get through the rubble in an absence of equipment." Anas Iltatir, who lived in one of the homes that was hit by the Israeli warplanes, said, quote, "They have nothing to do with the fighting. They are children. They are innocent. They are women staying at their homes. They have nothing to do with the fighting. Why would they hit them?" Unquote. With ambulances full, many of the victims had to be transported using donkey carts. Emergency workers who are being killed by Israeli attacks at an alarming rate are overwhelmed. End quote. The ongoing conflict has severely impacted various regions within Gaza, leading to significant civilian casualties and exacerbating the humanitarian crisis. After his private meeting with Trump on Monday, Netanyahu took questions from the press in the White House and said that a plan was being developed for, quote, "enabling the people of Gaza to freely make a choice to go wherever they want," unquote, and that the U.S. and Israel were working with several countries who will agree to take Palestinians. This was, of course, a blatant articulation of the goal of the ethnic cleansing in Gaza, since staying there was not one of the free choices being offered to Palestinians. In another strike, the medical charity Doctors Without Borders said an Israeli attack hit close to its clinics in the so-called safe zone of Al-Mawasi in southern Gaza. Meanwhile, a strike on a home in Deir al-Bala in central Gaza killed 11 people, including 5 children as young as 2, according to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, which received the bodies. 4 more people were killed in a separate strike that hit a house in Deir al-Bala, it said. A strike in the northern town of Beit Lahia flattened a home and killed a family of 7, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. A separate strike hit a group of people in an open area northwest of Gaza City, killing 4 people, including one who was planning to get married next week, the ministry said. 6 weeks have now passed since Israel imposed a total blockade of Gaza, impacting 2.3 million people there. Food that was stockpiled during the short-lived ceasefire is running out, while emergency meal distributions are ending, bakeries have closed down, and markets are empty. The International Farmers Organization, La Via Campesina, issued a press release on Tuesday urging emergency action to prevent, quote, "extermination by starvation and collapse of life in Gaza," unquote. The statement denounces the Israeli-engineered famine in Gaza, with 93% of Palestinians facing acute food insecurity, bringing Gaza to IPC or Integrated Food Security Phase Classification 5, which is extermination by starvation, the highest level of food insecurity, which indicates widespread death due to starvation, extremely critical acute malnutrition, and collapse of livelihood systems. Bread has disappeared from markets. Palestinians are dying from dehydration and untreated wounds. All bakeries and flour mills have been destroyed. Fuel, water, electricity, and medical supplies remain blockaded. These acts clearly satisfy the elements of genocide as defined under Article 2C of the Genocide Convention, namely the, quote, deliberate infliction of conditions of life calculated to bring about the physical destruction of a group in whole or in part. Because every mechanism to date, including diplomatic pressure, legal proceedings, and even declared ceasefires, has failed to stop Israel's genocide and engineered starvation in Gaza, we issue this urgent call for immediate action to pressure and mobilize for multilateral state-led humanitarian aid corridors and protective forces to halt the escalated extermination in Gaza. On Monday, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, published its Humanitarian Situation Update number 278 on the Gaza Strip. The statement said Gaza Strip is experiencing a worsening humanitarian crisis as water, sanitation, and food shortages intensify due to severe restrictions and infrastructure damage. A drastic reduction in water supply, combined with water outages and fuel shortages, has significantly affected access to safe drinking water. Of the three Mekorot water pipelines from Israel, only one remains functional, while the main desalination plant has reduced its output by 85%. UNICEF reports that drinking water availability has dropped to 6 liters per person per day and could fall even further, increasing the risk of disease outbreaks, especially among children. The sanitation conditions in Gaza are deteriorating, the OCHA report states, placing immense strain on healthcare facilities. Over 250 medical centers lack essential infection prevention supplies, and hospitals, already overwhelmed with casualties, are struggling with dwindling medical resources. The ongoing blockade on aid since early March has further exacerbated the crisis. Malnutrition is rising sharply, with infant nutrition supplies nearly gone, forcing families to use unsafe alternatives mixed with contaminated water. UNICEF has warned that thousands of pallets of life-saving aid remain blocked from entering Gaza, emphasizing that this is not a matter of charity, but an obligation under international law. The collapse of food production has added another layer of life-threatening hardship. Farmers face irrigation shortages, herders are losing livestock at alarming rates, and fishers struggle with security risks and equipment shortages. The destruction of agricultural infrastructure and the continued restrictions on movement have made access to food increasingly difficult. With essential resources dwindling and humanitarian space shrinking, the people of Gaza, particularly children in vulnerable groups, are facing an escalating crisis that threatens their survival. Homeland Security Department to surveil social media accounts of immigrants, lawful residents, for quote-unquote anti-Semitic activity, by Jacob Cross. In an attack on the free speech rights of the entire working class in the U.S. and internationally, on Wednesday, the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, announced that as part of its visa application process, it would begin screening and logging social media accounts and flagging what it deemed anti-Semitic activity. Those found advocating for Palestinian equality, accountability for U.S.-backed Israeli war crimes, or an end to the Zionist state are at risk of being denied entry to the U.S. The press release stated that U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, or USCIS, quote, will begin considering aliens' anti-Semitic activity on social media and the physical harassment of Jewish individuals as grounds for denying immigration benefit requests, unquote. In line with the previous administration of Democrat Joe Biden, which falsely conflated opposition to the genocide in Gaza with hatred of Jewish people, Trump's DHS is using the same lie to stifle the democratic rights of not only immigrants, but lawful permanent residents as well. The press release notes that this policy, quote, will immediately affect aliens applying for lawful permanent resident status, foreign students, and aliens affiliated with educational institutions linked to anti-Semitic activity, unquote, paving the way to not only deport, but to imprison and possibly assassinate alleged terrorist sympathizers. The DHS wrote that it will, quote, enforce all relevant immigration laws to the maximum degree to protect the homeland from extremists and terrorist aliens, including those who support anti-Semitic terrorism, violent anti-Semitic ideologies, and anti-Semitic terrorist organizations such as Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah, or Ansar Allah, aka the Houthis, end quote. Underscoring the anti-democratic character of the policy, DHS Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs Tricia McLaughlin wrote, quote, Secretary Noem has made it clear that anyone who thinks they can come to America and hide behind the First Amendment to advocate for anti-Semitic violence and terrorism, think again. You are not welcome here, end quote. The agency said it will, quote, consider social media content that indicates an alien endorsing, espousing, promoting, or supporting anti-Semitic terrorism, anti-Semitic terrorist organizations, or other anti-Semitic activity as a negative factor in any USCIS discretionary analysis when adjudicating immigration benefit requests, end quote. While people who evince support for organizations and groups that are currently engaged in armed resistance against U.S. imperialism and the genocide in Gaza have been targeted, no neo-Nazi or right-wing organizations that actually practice and promote anti-Semitism were listed. This latest attack on democratic rights was met by the Democratic Party with the same indifference it has displayed during the first 3 months of the Trump administration. As of this writing, not a single leading Democrat, including Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, or Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, has issued a statement condemning the policy. The latest policy follows the ongoing kidnapping and detention of international students who have spoken out against the genocide in Gaza, such as Columbia's Mahmoud Khalil and Tufts University's Rumeysa Ozturk, both of whom remain imprisoned in immigration detention centers for their pro-Palestinian thought crimes. On Monday, U.S. District Judge William K. Sessions III denied a request by Ozturk's lawyers to have her released, citing questions over jurisdiction. After Ozturk was kidnapped outside her apartment in Somerville, Massachusetts on March 25th, Immigration Gestapo whisked her over 1,300 miles to Louisiana without her inhaler. Ozturk's lawyers have claimed in court filings that their client has suffered at least 3 asthma attacks since being abducted. Far from standing up for students' democratic rights, universities have bent over backwards to accommodate Trump's dictatorial scheme to transform the major colleges into bastions of fascist thought and propaganda. This prostration has not prevented the Trump administration from vindictively withholding federal funding. On Tuesday, the Trump administration confirmed it had frozen more than $1 billion in funding for Cornell and $790 million for Northwestern. Both schools are among more than 60 currently facing civil rights investigations by the Department of Education over alleged anti-Semitism, that is, anti-genocide protests that were not sufficiently suppressed, revealing the close connections between many universities and the U.S. war machine. Cornell confirmed that it received 75 stop work orders in connection with grants from the Department of Defense. The university statement noted that the grants funded research that is, quote, profoundly significant to American defense, cybersecurity, and health, unquote. The blocking of funds to Northwestern comes less than 2 weeks after the Big Ten University released a report on its efforts to block students from organizing and supporting anti-genocide protests on campus, The report noted that the university had updated its demonstration policy to prohibit overnight demonstrations and to discipline students for, quote, refusing to remove or adjust a mask or face covering if requested to do so by an authorized university official for identification purposes, unquote. The university also announced mandatory anti-Semitism training for students, faculty, and staff, which uses the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, or IHRA, definition of anti-Semitism. The IHRA definition equates opposition to Zionism in Israel with anti-Semitism and deems it anti-Semitic to compare any of the innumerable crimes of Israel to those of the Nazis. Additionally, Northwestern announced ominously that it had hired, quoting, additional police, who, together with our existing officers, are empowered by the state to arrest people who trespass or otherwise violate the law. We have also enhanced our private security force and our relationships with outside law enforcement agencies, unquote. These and many other capitulations to the Trump administration did not prevent the university from having its funding frozen. Similarly, on Wednesday, the journal Science reported that the Trump administration was, quote-unquote, killing $400 million in federal grants to Columbia University. Last month, even after it capitulated to Trump's demands and expelled or suspended dozens of students, the university saw $250 million in biomedical research grants blocked by Trump. Emboldened by the complicity of the Democrats and universities in their deportation operations and attacks on democratic rights, Trump administration officials are openly flouting court orders and due process. Axios reported that during an ICE event on Wednesday, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem told agents that the more than 200 people sent to a maximum security El Salvadoran gulag without a trial, quote, should stay there for the rest of their lives, unquote. Speaking to the outlet, Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, said, quote, I've talked to the highest level at ICE and they've reassured me several times. Everyone that was removed under the Alien Enemies Act was a gang member and a terrorist, unquote. A CBS 60 Minutes report that aired this past Sunday found that 75%, or 179, of the 200 Venezuelan men kidnapped and currently imprisoned in El Salvador had no criminal record. Among those currently in prison is Andre Hernandez Romero, a 31-year-old makeup artist and gay man. According to his lawyer, Lindsay Tosolowski, Romero loves theater, has never been affiliated with the gang, and legally applied for asylum in the United States last year. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.